Welcome to the Atom CTO podcast. I'm here with my co-founder, Sam Noble.
Hello.
And today we're demystifying what a virtual CTO is. So as Atom CTO, we obviously provide on-demand CTO services to clients, which is both the startups and small businesses. And we obviously get asked quite a lot is, what is a virtual CTO? What's an on-demand CTO? What's a fractional CTO? So what we wanted to do is demystify that whole area and give you an understanding of what we do, but also what a CTO is meant to be doing. So I guess the first question is, what is a CTO? And I'll describe a little bit around that. So the CTO stands for Chief Technical Officer, and is essentially the person in the business who's in charge of all the technology, deciding the technology direction, the technology strategy, creating the roadmaps for the technology and how technology will be used within the business. And really, they're responsible for shaping that entire piece and also ensuring that the standards are maintained so you have high quality code that's maintainable and flexible and agile enough to be used and reused and reworked as the business priorities change. So that's obviously a very big role, and it's important that the person who gets into that role has good experience and good knowledge of not only technology, IT, but also the business aspects. And what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about all of the different aspects as a, you know, we believe a good CTO needs to have. So before we start on that conversation, what I'd like to do is just describe a little bit about our journeys to becoming a CTO. So Sam, first off, do you want to talk a little bit about how you became a CTO? If those listening have listened to the previous podcast, which is one that's introduced you, they'll know that you did your it's a physics degree, wasn't it? And computer science degree, sorry, and a master's, and then started working at Smith Bay. So we understand a little bit about the background of the history, but how did you go from being a developer to a CTO?
Almost by complete accident, I guess, as most people might have done. You kind of just land up in this role. So this was in the mid-2000s. I'd been, you know, working through various different jobs and going through different roles, you know, managing teams and remote teams and slowly working your way up the corporate ladder. So then I had the opportunity to join a startup, which was actually an engagement that we worked on together in Norway doing an IT health check for a company, and they just happened to need a CTO. We really loved the idea, loved the concept, so figured, why not? Let's go for this.
So was it a big leap that you had when you went from being a developer to CTO? Was there kind of a huge shift in mindset, skill set, those kinds of things?
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, I guess in the beginning, because and a lot of people would have ended up this way, where you generally you'll have a CEO has the idea and they need a tech partner. And the best way to attract a talented tech partner without paying them any money is to bring them on at a nice job title such as CTO. I mean, what 20-year-old developer doesn't want to be a CTO, right? So initially, it wasn't that much of a change because it was a brand new company, very small, and we were just building stuff. We were just implementing a building. So, you know, for the first 6 months, I guess it wasn't any different than, you know, just being a senior developer or a team lead. Then very quickly after that, things started to change quite quickly because suddenly now there's investors to talk to. So you're attending board meetings and presenting to the board and then having conversations with the board. You're also talking and helping raise investment and preparing for those meetings as well. So then you're getting out on all of the roadshows and, you know, kind of being the technical face of the company. So that kind of takes it up to a new set of skills in a new area that isn't just sitting there and writing code. So I guess it was a kind of gradual change for me, but it was, yeah, definitely you learn a lot of new skills very quickly.
Yeah, I think my journey was a little bit different from yours, I'd assume. So I started obviously at PwC and IBM, and I was a developer, but my kind of development career ended fairly quickly. I think a lot of what I realized was that, you know, no matter how good I thought I was as a developer, whether it was Java, VBA, or whatever it was I was doing, SQL, there's a ton of people out there that would be far better than me at coding. And actually what I was much more interested in was building the system, so the bigger picture. And I was very lucky in my career in that I got mentored by some excellent people at PwC and then at IBM. And I ended up working in as an architect. So I guess it started off as a technical architect and then as an enterprise architect. And essentially what my journey from development to architecture took about, I don't know, 2-3 years, I guess. And then from there, I was working at a much higher level, looking at the overall system. So for a good example was when we're working in big telco projects where we're replacing old systems, you know, our area was to look at one specific remit, which is maybe billing, but understand how that fits in with all of the other areas. So things like customer service, order management, downstream stuff like working with the calls coming off the network, etc. And understanding how all that gets put together, how you build resilience, how you build maintainability, how you can, if there's failures, how do you deal with that, all of that, those kinds of things. And also things, data migration and putting, you know, data from taking data from old system to new system. And then that was it, really kind of building this huge jigsaw puzzle, putting it together and understanding how those systems would work and communicate. And that teaches you a lot of basic principles around how you should build good, stable systems that can be maintained well. And from there, my journey was actually to becoming the CTO. I was an architect, the chief architect for a telco. And my CTO ended up working as a CEO at another business, and he asked me to do an IT health check, an IT strategy for the business. And so I went in for 2 weeks and actually talked to the entire business, had a look at what was going on with the IT team, but also understanding the business's issues. It was a very, you know, it was a very traditional company in the sense that, you know, IT was one silo and the rest of the business was another silo, and they were butting heads the whole time. And he essentially asked me, do I want to come and fix things? And I think my response at the time was, you know, I can't make it worse. So the idea was that I came in and took over as the IT director, CTO, and built the team, built the strategy, and then we executed it. And I think that was a slightly different progression, in that I'd managed teams and I'd managed kind of, not necessarily board level, but I'd always kind of talked to the CTOs previously as an architect. So I had that kind of experience coming into it.
So I think that's the secret. Do a health check for a company and then you'll end up as a CTO.
Yeah, if you know what you're talking about, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, when you talk to prospective clients for Atom, what do they think a CTO does?
That's varies greatly. So, and obviously depending on the technical knowledge of the founder or whoever you're talking to. So it can vary greatly. But generally they have that same question of, you know, what does a CTO really do on a day-to-day basis? And I guess it'll be different for depending on the company. So if you have a very, very technology led company where your entire product is tech, which, okay, that is most businesses these days, but, you know, there's other aspects to that. If it's more of that technical side, then you probably want a very deeply technical CTO who has that domain knowledge and can really drive forward with their experience and their connections and their network. Whereas if it's, you know, less about the product and more about the sales and the consumer facing side of things, then you probably want somebody with a bit more business acumen and a bit more salesy than that hard heavy tech. So I'd say, yeah, it varies greatly, but we've probably seen everything from people who have worked with other CTOs before and are looking to replace or scale down, all the way through to people who, you know, they know how to spell CTO and that's about it.
Yeah, I think what I find is that initially people, I guess when we first started Atom, people just assumed that I'd come in and build everything for them. Yeah. And we just sit and code. And that was the biggest, I won't say barrier, but the kind of knowledge transfer that I had to give to people, or the education that we had to give to people, is that as a CTO, our job is not necessarily sit there and build everything, but it's there to build the vision and the strategy and align the business with align the IT with the business, so that and find the developers and the right people who can develop what it is that you need to develop, so that as you grow as a business and things change, your platform and IT can adjust alongside with you. And I think, you know, what I've been talking to businesses about is rather than actually looking at a CTO as a one-man band that can do everything, which is do the strategy, talk to investors, build the system, maintain the system, all of that, it's too much for one person, right? It's too much for one human being to do that. I know, because I did that at Aztec, the early days of that, and eventually 16 people took over the one job that I was doing. It's an education piece, I think, for the business to understand. There's an operational aspect to IT, there's a strategic aspect to IT, and, you know, they can be governed by one person, but multiple people need to do the actual work.
Absolutely, and that changes over time. So, you know, in the early days of your startup, that can be one person managing most of that, because most of those challenges don't exist and most of those problems don't exist in those early days. But then very quickly, as you start to grow and scale as a company, that becomes more and more important. So when you have, you know, you're managing multiple satellite offices, you can't have one person who's in charge of, you know, your global presence. That's too much.
Yeah, and I think that's where Atom CTO, I think that's where we provide, you know, obviously very biased, but we provide a very excellent service. So for example, as you say, if you're a small business that's just started up and you have a guy that's working as your technical CTO, the person who's actually literally developing everything, right? They may be a great developer, but they may not be a great man manager. They may not be a great strategic thinker, and they may not think about operations and actually joining up the IT technology platform that you've got with the other areas of the business, such as finance, accounting, sales, marketing, all those areas. And where we can step in is that we can help build that framework around the CTO so that they concentrate on what they're doing best, which is building that platform and using their knowledge within that domain to create a stellar product. And we can then ensure that the business, other areas of the business don't lose focus from a technology perspective by giving that kind of framework and that support to a developer, essentially, is what they are within that business, and coaching them and how they can talk to investors, and even stepping in and doing that for them if that's something they don't feel comfortable with.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that kind of guiding them through the transition.
Yeah, because I think there's the other aspect is that I don't know about you, but I've seen that a lot of developers struggle to manage people. Because oftentimes they work as a developer on their own, or okay, within a team, but a lot more are working as freelancers on their own. And once they get to a situation where they need to manage 10, 15 people, they just don't know how to do that. And especially managing different skill sets within a team. So not necessarily just developers, but UI, business analysts, testers, those kinds of things.
Definitely. It's a very different mindset. I mean, even back in the early days of my career, I thought that even the architecture and managing teams was the most boring thing in the world. All I wanted to do was sit there and write code. That for me, that was what was really fun. And then over the years, you realize that, I have a pretty good handle on this. I want to do the next thing now. Then you start getting into the architecture and leading teams and that progression. And it's a very different skill set. And as you say, the best developers might not be the best team leaders or team managers. So it is a different skill set. You need more of those kind of soft skills and understanding people. So, you know, sometimes some of the best managers are not the most technical people, and vice versa.
Which was leads me to a great anecdote about IBM. And, you know, in IBM, we had this huge project, and it was massive, 300, how many hundreds of millions it was massive. And we had, I don't know, in just 20 managers doing kind of in one area, which is very odd. And I remember talking to one of the guys in a meeting, and he goes to me, "Well, I'm not technical." And I said, "You work for IBM. How can you not be technical? I mean, it's IBM, for God's sake." He goes, no, I don't understand technology. It's like, what are you doing here? But anyway, that's a different discussion. So do companies really need a CTO? That's the question there.
Again, I guess a lot of it comes down to the stage of the company, what stage they're at, and what is it they're trying to do? Because as you say, over the years, that role definitely changes. So in the beginning, you need a technical founder who they're not doing necessarily all of the roles that a CTO of a large corporation would do, or a company going through a growth stage. So yes, you need a CTO in as much as you need a strong technical lead, a partner who can work with the co-founders to kind of translate the businessy stuff into the technical stuff and vice versa. Because, you know, majority of founders and CEOs who would be sitting in an investor meeting, they will struggle with some of the really technical stuff because that's not their domain. They're not focused on that. Now, I think, we've been pretty lucky in that a lot of the founders that we've worked with have had a really active interest in the technology side. So that it makes that kind of communication a lot easier. But generally, you don't find that. So whether or not it is a traditional CTO role, it's that kind of tech lead that you need. Now, what that role entails will depend on the size and the stage of the company. But I'd say it's safe to say you do need that kind of technical lead there to help build, to help guide, to help get things in place, because for a startup, especially, or for a company that's growing, you're building up these foundations. And as we've seen, things can happen very quickly where, suddenly now you have to grow very quickly. And if you don't have that kind of foundation in place, you're scrambling. So now suddenly you're trying to hire people, but you don't have any employee handbooks. You don't have any processes or workflows for managing your development cycles. So you're suddenly just have this flood of tasks that you have to take on.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that is, very, very important point. So I think, so the way I talk to businesses that, you know, we come across is that, okay, don't think of the person that you're hiring as a CTO as such, because a lot of them come to us saying that I need someone to develop X, Y, and Z thing, right? Can you do this and we'll give you shares or whatever? And I say to them, look, you don't need a CTO to do that. CTOs should be more operational and strategic and shouldn't really necessarily be sitting there doing this day to day, which is coding. But what you do need is a technical lead. So you call them a technical lead and you build a team around them. So you can you have them as the one who will help frame the technical architecture along with the CTO, so that the CTO is essentially the bridge between the business and the IT. So that's what the, right. I believe that role should entail. So you're there, you understand technology, you understand the business, and you should have people underneath you working for you that understand technology and probably in many ways better than you will do, depending on what you're doing. But that you, from a startup's perspective, you need a technical lead, and the CTO doesn't need to be a full-time human being. And that's where obviously Atom CTO comes in, is, and we're able to help guide that tech lead or actually provide that tech lead with, you know, our resources and get the thing built, and also then provide the soft skills on the other end, which is managing teams and obviously talking to investors and those kinds of things. And I think, as you say, that the role grows and changes, and we can sit there and support that tech lead as that role evolves, right? And give them the coaching that they would need in order to help manage the teams and, you know, do things like help actually, you know, if they expand abroad. So these are things that we've done, right? We've set up offices abroad, and I know when the first time I did that, go set up an office in Singapore. Okay. How do I do that? You know, and you've got to figure that out. You've got to figure out so many different things around that. And we've got the experience that we can help people do all of that. I think one of the interesting things is that, well, my very first role as CTO, and I don't know if you found this, is that, you know, as I mentioned, I created that 3-year strategy. I ended up staying for 5 years, and, you know, we were very successful. Within the first year, we turned the business around from a loss-making business to a profit-making business, and it started making year-on-year exponential growth in profits and revenue and doing very, very well. And it hit a point where I was very, you know, from day one, I always knew there was going to be a succession plan. So the teams were trained. I had a number two who became the eventual IT director, and I slipped up, pushed up to a position of business development director. But what I found is, you know, as time went on and the team was more and more stable, is I was doing less and less. And at the very beginning, I was in the weeds and I was, you know, actually doing some coding and working on databases and designing and architecting and things like that. And as time moved on, I did less and less of that and got more and more removed from the day-to-day IT because it was all being managed for me. And I was working on new strategic initiatives. So we were looking at new partnerships for new businesses and how can we grow the business in different territories and things like that. And that was what I was doing. And I remember after that, obviously, I moved to Aztec. So for those who don't know, Aztec Exchange was one of the first fintechs, 2012, raised $12 million. And we were a global invoice financing outfit, overall raising around about $40 million in the process. And one of the reasons I took that job, not only because it was a very interesting sector to be in, but it was to get my hands dirty again. And so I went back to Aztec and I started doing things like cabling servers and, you know, installing, you know, Veeam and VMware onto servers and actually, you know, understanding how to configure telephony. So doing SIP trunks and things like that, stuff that I hadn't done for about 6-7 years. And it was actually very daunting thing to go back and do, because for 2-3 years I hadn't done anything technical, and that experience again made you realize, oh, this is again what, you know, these are the skills that you can build. And I think those are the experiences that we can bring to the table for companies, where, you know, we can talk about international expansion, we can talk about building our own telephony systems, you know, our own servers. We've run multinational businesses across different across different sectors, and this is something that I think that we can bring to the table, especially when you're a startup and you don't have people with that knowledge around you.
Right. So I think that's actually a really great point about, this is one of the key roles of a CTO, I would say, as much as a CEO, as a founder, is that understanding the right people for the right job at the right time.
Yes.
So a startup, you know, you don't need to hire a huge dev team and burn through all of your cash. You need to find that balance, and then, you know, how that changes over the years. I think that's super important. And I think a lot of the kind of the idea we have today of CTOs, it again, we talked about this in the last podcast, in the whole kind of the early days of Silicon Valley with the gold rush out there. It just became the standard where, you know, everybody had an idea. They needed a founder. The best way to attract someone into a company and pay them very little money and give them equity was to call them a CTO, because, you know, that's an instant job promotion. And I think that that kind of watered down the meaning or the power, the gravitas behind the title CTO, because suddenly every 20-year-old in the Valley was a co-founder and CTO. So it kind of diluted and muddied the waters a little bit around what a CTO is and does, which in a lot of ways, you know, made it a lot more interesting, because now a CTO, okay, that's not so exciting anymore, depending on the stage.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much the C-suite has kind of ballooned. So you've got the chief science officer, you've got the chief security officer, you've got the chief data officer, all of these things that are there. And I guess that's where we can touch a little bit about what's the difference between a CTO and a CIO. Traditionally, in large organizations, the CTO will report into the CTO. Sorry, the CTO will report into the CIO. And so will all the other C-suite tech guys, which are the security and data and science officers and things like that. So if you're at a very much larger business, the CIO will be really the one sitting on the board level. So you touched on it a little bit just on the previous answer about how do you pay a CTO. Now, I guess one of the things that, again, I talk to businesses about is that the glory of Atom CTO is that you can get CTO with experience on board, but we don't take equity and we don't take large salaries. So for a minimum amount, we can help you do all of the things that you need to do from a strategic and operational perspective, and you can keep the equity to yourself. And I think that's key, because I think people give away too much, right? I don't know. I heard recently one guy that gave 25% to their CTO and they fell out within a year, and they had no mechanism to take that equity back. So wow. Now someone's got 25% of your company and they're not anything to do with it.
Yeah. So your contracts are very important about shares and share options and understanding all of that.
Exactly. And I think one of the myths is that, you know, you can't raise money without a CTO, but we've, you know, you've worked for one client, I've worked for another client, and they've had my clients had multiple raises, and they've raised a significant amount of money with us being acting as their virtual CTOs.
Absolutely. And I mean, so again, I think this was one of the biggest proponents up until a few years ago, where I think most founders, especially most non-technical founders, really believed that they wouldn't, or they didn't feel confident standing in front of an investor or talking to an investor without that technology person beside them. Because again, in this day and age, 90% of companies, it's tech-based. Even if you're doing, you know, door-to-door deliveries, you have massive technical infrastructure behind that. And they just didn't feel comfortable going in there. And also, to some extent, you know, the investors, when we've been on that side of the table, on the investor side of the table, you're investing in the team. So you kind of want to make sure that they have the right skill set available to them. Now, whether that's outsourced or not, we don't really care, as long as they have that relationship, as long as they have those people and they can deliver on what they promise. That's the most important, because whether your CTO is on the payroll or not, whether they're sending you invoices, it's kind of the same. They can still disappear. They can still, you know, screw things up in the same way. You don't really get any extra security just because they're on a payroll. Okay, you know, we could argue there's some edge cases to that, but in general, it's probably not worth the overhead, especially when you consider what you were saying earlier. With somebody like us, you're paying by the hour. You're not salaried and locked into these contracts. So you actually mitigate a lot more risk.
Yeah, and I think the other thing here is that, you know, we're not saying that we can't work alongside CTOs. We can obviously help them and work alongside them. But the key, I think, from an Atom point of view and what we bring to the table, not only is our experience in fundraising and X, Y, and Z, but it's also the fact that we work across multiple different industries, have knowledge in different areas, and we have a very, very wide network, and it's global. So that very few single-person CTOs are going to come into a company and be able to offer as much as we can offer our clients, and they can, you know, mix and match and take whatever they want out of it. But, you know, there's not many people who come, and this is actually something, a question for you to see what your opinion is, but there's not many people who come into a business with experience in, you know, gaming, ed tech, fintech, telco, healthcare, you know, health tech. So that's the thing. So actually, one of the debates I had the other day was, should you hire a CTO that's been in the same industry as you? So for example, let's say you're doing telephony, there's something to do with telecoms. Should you hire a CTO that's been in telecoms for the last 10 years? And my answer was no, actually, around that. Because in my opinion, we've worked in so many different industries, learning those new industries. Okay, it takes a little bit of time, but if you're intelligent enough, you could pick it up fairly quickly. But the important thing about having experience in different exposure to different industries is you can build best practice from those industries and take what you see has worked in other places and bring that to you to the table for whatever industry you're now working in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess this kind of weaves into a little bit of that point of, you know, what stage is your company at? Because if you're not in that very early startup stage where the technical prowess or the domain knowledge is that important. So, you know, there's some companies that we've worked with who, you know, they're so very technical that that early founder really needs to be in that domain to help drive things forwards. But as soon as you get out of that, it becomes a lot more abstract. So I guess it's similar to, you know, should you invest in someone who's had one successful exit? It's the same kind of thing, right? This guy has built a company in the e-commerce space and, you know, he made his millions, he sold that. He's now doing his second one. Because they've done it once and they did it well, that doesn't really mean that it's repeatable, right? So if, okay, let's say they had four or five exits consecutively and done really well and had some, you know, ups and downs along the way, that's very powerful. But if they've only had kind of one good experience behind them, that could have a negative impact as well.
So this is very, very interesting because this is kind of the big company myth that I come across quite a lot. So, you know, I've worked at some very businesses that became very successful and, you know, I handed over to different people. And I think, you know, there's the CTO that starts the business and goes for the first 4 or 5 years is very different from the CTO that is there after the first 5 years, right? Because essentially it's the first 5 years which are the nightmare that you're going through. And this is not to disparage any CTOs out there, but the hard work is really from the beginning up to the 5 years. And then if you're taking a business from 0 to 100 people, that's pretty hard. Getting from 100 to 500, yes, it's complex, but it's not as hard as, I mean, I don't personally think it is, having run teams of, you know, more than 100. Then it's a question of how good your organizational structure is. And that should have been embedded over the first few years, right, of the business. And I think a lot of what you find is that people, they have the badge, they've worked at some large organization, I don't know, for example, like Monzo, whatever it is, and just by being associated with them, actually Google's a good example of this, just by being associated with them, people suddenly think they're, you know, imbued with greatness or endowed with greatness. Where actually they may have just picked up something along the way. So they may have just taken this job and they've had it for a year and they didn't really do very much. They didn't change very much or didn't, you know, achieve very much. But because they come from that background, people go, oh my God, they must be amazing. And I think, you and I know one person like this who actually I took over from, who has a great, amazing CV, but actually has done really very little hands-on work over that time and didn't really build anything. Or maybe he did, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, I think we've probably all worked with people like that who they kind of just get hired on their background or their last job and just come in and don't really do much.
So I guess that's the question there is, what do you think about hiring a CTO? So what do you think the key questions? Because you went through this with one of your clients recently. Like what kind of things were they looking for? What kind of things did you ask when you were looking to hire the CTO?
So really, I mean, the main thing, and it kind of comes back to most of the hires within your company, is that they have to fit. They have to fit with the culture and fit with the rest of the team. Because, you know, as a founder, when you're bringing on the CTO, you're kind of delegating a lot of trust to them. You're handing over a lot of trust. This baby that you've been growing and nurturing for however long, now you're kind of bringing somebody else in on a very high level. So they will be building out a lot of stuff for you and, you know, have access to a lot of things. So you really need to have a good relationship there. Then it just comes into more of their kind of background. And again, it's highly subjective on, you know, what stage your company is at. So if you are looking for more of that technical founder who's going to come in and you know, they're going to be sitting there and developing, then it's a bit more of a technical kind of interview. Like, okay, you know, what kind of stuff have you built before? What's your experience? You know, what is your view or your vision of this role? Because obviously you're coming in now developing software and helping build, but quite quickly you are going to have to kind of scale up your skill set. So, you know, interviewing a lot of people who at the minute they're be a tech lead or a team lead, who the idea of growing into the CTO role is terrifying for them. Whereas other people, you know, are really chomping at the bit to kind of take that next step. So it's a really big balance against what you're trying to do with your company, what stage you're at. And it'll be all the way through from, yeah, how technical is this person to, you know, what is their approach to disaster management scenarios or like the really high level stuff on the business end. You know, who are the people they know, what circles that they work in. And depending on the area of the world they're from, you know, we probably know the same circles that, that these people are moving in. So we can, you know, ask people in those networks to find out, you know, have you heard of this person or that person? Because still in the tech world, depending on the technology in the area, it's a pretty small world. When you get high enough up, you will, you know, you'll know somebody who knows somebody who knows that person, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think, as you say, it's once you get to the level of CTO, it's about personality, right? And if you can't work with that alongside that person, and in fact, that's something that we do at Atom, is we take over where there's been falling outs between CTOs and founders. All right, well, thanks for that, Sam. I think that's given people a good overview of what a virtual CTO is and what we do, and a bit about our backgrounds as well. So thanks for that.
Thank you.